1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Former President Trump claiming in a social media post he'll be arrested on Tuesday related to the Manhattan DA's investigation into hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels in 2016. He's calling on supporters to protest. ABC has not verified these claims, and the Manhattan DA's office had no comment. In a separate matter, sources tell ABC News a federal judge has ruled that one of his attorneys, Evan Corcoran, must appear before a grand jury again regarding the former president's handling of classified documents.
Sources say investigators are zeroing in on a call between Trump and his lawyer that allegedly took place on the day federal investigators subpoenaed surveillance video from inside Mar-a-Lago. Corcoran, who's already been called before this grand jury once before, refused to answer questions, citing attorney-client privilege. But now this judge is siding with prosecutors who cited a legal provision which allows them to work around attorney-client privilege.
Governor of Wyoming signed a bill banning abortion medication. This is ABC News. Federal prosecutors and the FBI are investigating ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, after it acknowledged that four employees inappropriately obtained data of some U.S. TikTok users. Company condemned those actions and said they're no longer employed. World Health Organization says new research is providing more clues into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Samples from the Wuhan market in China where the first human cases occurred show the commingling of genetic material from raccoon dogs and the COVID virus, suggesting a possible link, researchers say. World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
This data do not provide a definitive answer to the question of how the pandemic began. But every piece of data is important in moving us closer to that answer.
The research bolsters the theory that COVID-19 was the result of transmission from animals to humans. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Actor Lance Reddick died Friday. He was 60, best known for his role as Lieutenant Daniels in The Wire. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Great to listen to while having a Linies and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
You're listening to independent programming that has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. To learn more and to see our entire broadcast lineup, go to civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And this is Morning Cannolis at the studios of Civic Media, today in a special location, coming to you not from the studios of WAUK in downtown Waukesha, but today from the Wisconsin Grassroots Network in Mazomanie, the Wisconsin Heights High School, way out here in Highway 14. Delighted to be here for the next couple of hours as we talk, as always, reviewing, analyzing, discussing the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so very much for joining me once again this morning. Our special broadcast of Civic Media coming to you once again from the Wisconsin Grassroots Network. It is a program, an event, a gathering of Wisconsinites from around the state every single year at this site, at this time. This year, the theme, as is our theme virtually every morning here at Morning Cannolis, every Saturday morning, Making Democracy Personal, a program out here of the Wisconsin Grassroots Network, focusing on ways of strengthening democracy, impacting legislation, voting issues, access to the franchise, then economic Bill of Rights, climate issues, environmental issues, Native American issues, rural issues, healthcare access, all kinds of wonderful things. It is a gathering of activists, leaders, speakers, and advocates on many issues important to our constituencies statewide. If you have the chance, come out here for the next several hours. I'm here for the next couple of hours. Right after me, Earl Ingram is going to be taking over from 11 to noon. The program is going to be here throughout the day. And so come out to the Wisconsin Heights High School in Mazomanie and share in this wonderful convocation, this wonderful gathering of Wisconsinites coming together to make democracy personal. Even though we are coming from this remote location this morning, lots of activity here, lots of wonderful things going on. As always, we are going to be taking your callers. Calvin, my great producer, back in Waukesha, going to be managing and orchestrating your calls to me out here in Mazomanie. The phone number is always 844-967-2789. That phone number once again, 844-967-2789. Calvin and I taking your phone calls this morning, as every morning, live today, both from Waukesha, but more significantly, way out here in Mazomanie, in the heart of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Grassroots Network, the 14th annual convocation of that group. Our syllabus, as always, is ambitious, but it is, as always, achievable. I like to think it's informative and perhaps even inspiring to many of you. And we're going to ask the questions that we always do, which is, what happened? What are the facts? What do we know about what happened out there in the world this past week? Or in this case, getting you caught up on some events from the previous weeks. Why is that important? Why should we know about these things? How is it relevant? How is it material to my life, my livelihood? And third, what do we do about it? If we can, in fact, take action, what do we do about that? What are our responses to that as Americans, as residents of the state of Wisconsin and beyond? How should we respond to the facts, the importance, and the actions that call us to engage here in Wisconsin and throughout the United States of America? We're going to be talking about all those kinds of things, as always, right here on Morning Cannolis. Let me tell you a little bit more about our syllabus this morning. We're going to be reviewing a number of issues, getting us caught up in the wake of our three-part series on the Supreme Court, on a number of different things that have passed and occurred in the past several weeks involving hate crimes in the Louisville Police Department. Issues related to civics this morning, as always. We're going to talk this morning about the crime fraud exception, which is once again back in the news, yes, in connection with the investigation of the former President Donald Trump. We're going to talk about immunity issues again. We're going to talk likewise about the Department of Justice and ongoing investigations, and also going to be talking about some significant issues related to abortion in America. Privacy rights, a major event happening just yesterday in the state of Wyoming affecting privacy rights, reproductive access, chatting about some of that news, and in that connection as well, a significant issue coming out of, as well, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals having to do with a pardon issue that's also highly relevant to what we talk about every single Saturday morning right here on Morning Cannolis. Join us for all of that. Beyond that, we have some interesting, significant international issues. Many of you may have heard already that the president of Russia was charged by the International Criminal Court just yesterday. We're going to chat about that, the reason why that is important, not only with respect to the war in Ukraine, but also with respect to the advancement, the support of the rule of law throughout our nation and across the globe. We're going to pick up a story from Mexico having to do with the National Electoral Institute there and a significant change that will probably compromise the legitimacy of the franchise in that nation to our south. And then, time permitting, again, into our second hour, talking about some very specific things having to do with the Lac du Flambeau tribe right here in the state of Wisconsin, a nursing home also in the state of Wisconsin, indicted recently by federal authorities in Madison. We're going to chat about a marshal's roundup of fugitives, bringing people back into custody to face justice, to face the rule of law in our federal courts, and then an issue related to the open meetings law. If we can get to all of that, lots of things on our syllabus today as we pursue our discussion. And again, as always, taking your callers here on Morning Cannolis at 844-967-2789. Calvin and I with you this morning, encouraging your calls, and we'll get you on the air to talk about those major issues. Getting back to our normal agenda, however, this morning we're going to go back and talk about the significant things that happened on this day, and for just this morning, also those things that happened tomorrow, March 19th in history. We've got eight topics, all those kinds of things all together this morning. Let's begin with what happened today in history, March 18th. Let's begin with one way back in 1766. The British Parliament, obviously responding to a group called the Sons of Liberty. This advance, of course, of our own Revolutionary War, repealed the Stamp Act. Remember the Stamp Act from your history classes in high school, perhaps in college as well, after some violent protests in the American colonies about the imposition, the financial impact on businesses here in the colonies, now the United States, imposed initially by the British Parliament in 1765. A year later, on this day, March 18th, repealed, following significant pushback, protests by the colonists, obviously here in the American colonies, and responded to by the British Parliament, 1766, March 18th. Jumping ahead dramatically, 1902, an interesting event for those of you who are into opera. Tenor Enrico Caruso, major opera star, one of its first musicians to document his own voice on a gramophone, made his first phonograph recording today on March 18th, way back in 1902. A music history event. 1965. Soviet cosmonaut Alexei Leonov became the first man to walk in space on a spaceship called the Voskhod 2, coming, again, advancing the space race in the 1960s. And finally, on this day in history, March 18th, A fourth event, 1990, a significant issue in the world of art. Consider the world's biggest art heist up to that point. Two men pretending to be police officers went into the museum in Boston, the Gardner Museum in Boston, and stole 13 different works, including some by Rembrandt, some by Vermeer, and those works never recovered in the history of our nation, still out there presumably somewhere. All of that happening today in history, March 18th. In history. A few things related to what happens tomorrow, March 19th, also in the history of our nation and other places. Let me review those as well. These highly relevant to what's going on today in America as well. 1918, March 19th, 1918, President Woodrow Wilson signed the Standard Time Act, establishing daylight savings time in the United States, also establishing time zones, making them subject to federal jurisdiction for the first time in our nation. 1918, first time a presidential decree, an act, a piece of legislation establishing daylight saving time, which again we have just experienced again across our nation. A second event, 1931. This happening again March 19th, 1931. The Nevada legislature legalized gambling for the first time, which was a way, of course, for casinos in the state to not only entertain people coming to Nevada, but also to enhance dramatically the financial status of that state, most notably in Las Vegas. That happening in 1931. A third event, 1982. Remember this? Argentine forces mobilized after dispute between Argentine workers and British scientists on the British-controlled island of South Georgia. Where did that lead to? You all recall, you know this well. It led to the Argentina's invasion of the Falklands Island 2 weeks later, and the war between the Brits and the Argentines, that happening 1982. And finally, on March 19th, this day in 2003, an event that's going to be looked back on a lot this coming week. President George W. Bush ordered airstrikes on Baghdad, launching effectively the Iraq War that eventually ousted dictator Saddam Hussein, who was wrongly believed at the time to be manufacturing, possessing weapons of mass destruction. As many of you know, I was there. I was there several years later, 2006 to 2008, to witness the fact that Saddam Hussein could not possibly have manufactured or possessed those weapons. Nonetheless, I and many others there, civilians and especially our military, there to promote the rule of law, to try to establish once again the basis for the rule of law in the wake of the highly oppressive Saddam Hussein regime. All of that happening, 2003, we are going to be hearing a lot about that this coming week as we think back 20 years ago, the start of the Iraqi war and the notion that our nation, after the announcement 20 years ago today, March 19th, entered into a war that obviously now in the wake of history, not premised upon good intelligence, good information, nonetheless, dramatically changed not only the Middle East, but also our nation and our place in our society. Stay with us right after this break as we launch into those many stories that are animated law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America here on Morning Cannolis, Saturday, March 18th.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
WAUKradio.com.
And we are back here on Morning Cannolis, a special broadcast, a live broadcast here from Mazomanie, Wisconsin, at the Wisconsin Grassroots Network, the 14th annual convocation of this wonderful gathering of leaders, speakers, advocates from throughout the state, getting together to talk about a variety of different things, including voting, including climate issues, economic issues, bills of rights, Native American issues, rural issues, urban issues, health care, all kinds of things related to the future of our democracy. The theme this year, making democracy personal. And so we invite you not only to come out here, if you have the opportunity, the Wisconsin Heights High School, visit with me, visit with Earl Ingram, who's going to be following me at 11 o'clock this morning, visit with all these wonderful people here. This morning, if you do come out, we also have for you cannolis. Believe it or not, it is not unusual, as Calvin knows well, for us to have cannolis in the studio of the WAUK radio station right there in Waukesha. Today we've got them as well, not only for the attendees, the members, the participants of this wonderful Wisconsin Grassroots Network gathering, but also for you if you stop by and chat with me. But along the way, we're also very much inviting your remote calls, 844-967-2789. Calvin and I taking your calls, your comments, your questions about these major issues having to do with law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Let's jump right into those after our initial segment here this morning on Morning Cannolis. I'm going to begin, as I promised, with a major issue that, again, flew somewhat under the radar this past week related to hate crimes in America. The Federal Bureau of Investigation annually collects information from law enforcement entities and governmental entities about incidents of hate crimes throughout our nation. And they do this every single year. The new report just issued about a week or so ago by the FBI, again, an agency of the United States Department of Justice. The new report corrects some previously understated figures and establishes, believe it or not, that during 2021, there were 10,840 different instances of hate crimes in America. The updated report shows that those hate crimes increased nationwide by about 31% from 2021 to 2021, and offenses reported for 2021, stunning to hear, stunning to know from this very credible report, were the highest on record since the FBI began collecting this information way back in 1995. And so very significant that that report comes out just this month, establishing once again that we have some significant problems here in America when it comes to hate crimes. Obviously, the categories of hate crimes, people victimized by hate crimes in all different areas of their lives, immutable characteristics related to race, national origin, familial status, religion, faith belief, ability, disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, familial status, economic status, all those kinds of things that unfortunately attract and prompt people to attack, both verbally and sometimes regrettably physically, engaging in hate crimes in America. Again, the FBI began collecting this information way back in 1995. 2021, the highest record on record since it began doing this, and a jump from 2020 to 2021 of 31%. And again, significant for all of us to identify that, understand that. Among the statistics, again, significant for all of us in Wisconsin, but certainly in southeastern Wisconsin, the number of anti-Sikh hate crimes, the incidents there in the updated report, shows an increase by more than double, 108% jump from 2020 to 2021. Hate crimes visited against members, citizens, residents of the Sikh communities here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation. A very significant issue. Now what do we do about it? All of those things obviously being reported on, probably even with the updated report, understated somewhat from our FBI, a part of the Department of Justice. Nonetheless, there are things that can and should be done. We know that Congress routinely conducts hearings, reviews of these kinds of things, and does in fact pass legislation. Very proud of the fact that I was a part of an administration that back in 2009, 2010 implemented the Shepard-Byrd Hate Crimes Act, which expanded the ways in which federal prosecutors could indeed prosecute a variety of different hate crimes, including, not just limited to, but including those targeting hate crimes based upon sexual orientation and gender identity. That, of course, relies fundamentally on opportunities for people to identify those crimes, to come forward, to tell the local police, to tell the FBI about those kinds of events happening, and make decisions about getting involved, not only to ensure that victims are identified and given the care, the treatment that they need by our victim witness coordinators, our state system, our federal system, our local system as well, but then to the extent that we can, and we do indeed investigate those hate crimes, that they are the result in prosecutions, criminal prosecutions in our state tribunals, but also, of course, in the federal courts as well. I've done those myself. Our courts do them routinely. Important, however, again, that citizens respond. When you see something, say something. When you identify among your family members, your neighborhood members, others in your community who have suffered the horrific results of hate crimes in America, let them know that there are avenues to redress that and to seek some remedies in our system. Just this past week, once again, confirming that between 2020 and 2021, this wild increase of 31% increase in hate crimes in America, 10,840 reported during this time period. A significant event, a significant thing to know. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk about some other form of discrimination coming out of the city of Louisville and the response of the Department of Justice to that. Stay with us as we continue this discussion here on Morning Cannolis.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Former President Trump claiming in a social media post he'll be arrested on Tuesday related to the Manhattan DA's investigation into hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels in 2016. He's calling on supporters to protest. ABC has not verified these claims, and the Manhattan DA's office had no comment. In a separate matter, sources tell ABC News a federal judge has ruled that one of his attorneys, Evan Corcoran, must appear before a grand jury again regarding the former president's handling of classified documents.
Sources say investigators are zeroing in on a call between Trump and his lawyer that allegedly took place on the day federal investigators subpoenaed surveillance video from inside Mar-a-Lago. Corcoran, who's already been called before this grand jury once before, refused to answer questions, citing attorney-client privilege. But now this judge is siding with prosecutors who cited a legal provision which allows them to work around attorney-client privilege.
Governor of Wyoming signed a bill banning abortion medication. This is ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Illinois is cashing in on Wisconsinites' need for weed. The Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation estimates the state made over $36 million in tax revenue last year from Wisconsinites traveling across the border to buy pot. Governor Evers is proposing fully legalizing marijuana in his state budget, but state Republicans say that's not going to happen. The name of Father John Coulinan, who served at St. Paul's Church in Mosinee and St. Mary's in Wausau, has been added to the list of credibly accused priests within the La Crosse Diocese. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporting Coulinan has multiple substantiated allegations of abuse. He died in 1974. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call launched the investigation into clergy abuse in April of 2021 and since has generated about 250 reports from across the state. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at LLS.org.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
We are back here on our weekend review, our analysis, and our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you once again for joining me and my producer, Calvin, here for our Saturday morning broadcast. Today, Calvin in Waukesha, I am Mesomania at the Wisconsin Grassroots Network, visiting with people here, advocates, leaders, people who are interested in the issues of our time in a variety of different ways and means. Delighted to be with you as well from your venues throughout the state of Wisconsin, perhaps even beyond. We are talking as a part of our initial discussion about discrimination in America. And right before the break, talked about this significant report coming out of the FBI just this past week, confirming what we have all known, which is that we have a significant problem, challenge, that's probably understating it dramatically, involving hate crimes visited upon people of races, national origins, abilities, disabilities, faith, beliefs, religions, sexual orientations, gender identities, familial status, economic status, all the immutable characteristics that are protected by our laws, but nonetheless, people find themselves on the receiving end of hate crimes. Important to not only track those, identify those as they are known and seen in our communities, but also responding to them to provide services, support, and yes, in appropriate circumstances, federal and state criminal prosecution for people who engage in that kind of heinous behavior. Let's talk about something else in America that happened just a couple of weeks ago coming out of Louisville. Many of you, probably all of you, remember that way back in March of 2022, a young woman named Breonna Taylor, she was an emergency room technician, was shot and killed by police officers who were assigned to a drug enforcement unit. It was a botched raid of her apartment. Huge numbers of problems with the raid, with the execution of the search warrant there, involving not only civil suits, but also termination of police officers, investigations that continue. Her death, Breonna Taylor's death way back in March of 2020, that only prompted nationwide outrage as a result of what the law enforcement authorities did at that time. Family, her mother in particular, a great advocate for identifying this as a problem, as for Breonna, of course, and for her family, but also for what it represented beyond that in the police department generally. And sure enough, after a long investigation, a pattern of practice investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice, by the Civil Rights Division, about 2 weeks ago, the police department in Louisville, Kentucky, identified by the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, as having some very significant problems in management. Undeniably, at the core of this, the kinds of things that Breonna Taylor and her family experienced, but also a 90-page report issuing this earlier this month, painting a very grim portrait of the Louisville Metro Police Department, detailing a variety of serious, frankly, sometimes just downright shocking instances of misconduct. What do those include? Things like excessive force in the basic day-to-day operation of the police force there, searches based on invalid warrants, unlawful car stops, detentions and harassment of people during street sweeps, broad patterns of discrimination against people of color, and those also with behavioral health problems. The conduct of the police department, according to the Attorney General, again, releasing this finding, this report based upon the investigation, again, sparked by the horrific death, the murder of Ms. Taylor in March of 2020. The Attorney General says this: the police department's conduct has undermined its public safety mission and strained its relationship with the community it is meant to protect and serve. This conduct is unacceptable. It is heartbreaking. Breonna Taylor, he went on to say, was a symptom of problems that we have seen now in the Louisville department for many, many years. Beyond just that problem, again, as the general report indicates, a lot of indication of blatant instances of racism against black residents in Louisville, including a disproportionate use of traffic stops in black neighborhoods, hurling of epithets. It's horrific even to say them, so I'm not going to say them out loud. Hurling of epithets by police officers toward members of our black community. Kristen Clark, who is the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights in this administration, the administration of Joe Biden, the administration of Merrick Garland, said that targeting black people for traffic stops and searches turned this conventional law enforcement system into weapons of oppression, submission, and fear. That's very strong language. That's language condemning what is happening there in Louisville. The inquiry also uncovered this endemic pattern, this broad pattern of destruction and of dysfunction that went far beyond just the racial discrimination, as horrific as that is. Widespread problems in the ways that the police handled the investigations of domestic violence, sexual assault cases, allegations of misconduct by law enforcement officers,
One woman apparently told the Justice Department during the course of its pattern of practice investigation that she'd informed police officers that a narcotics detective was extorting sex from her daughter and two other women who he had accused of drug possession. The accusation, originally labeled as unfounded, proved to be true about 5 years later when three more women came forward. The detective resigned but was never prosecuted. That kind of thing, many, many instances of that described in this report. So what do we do about that? We always ask the question again, what happened? Why is it important? We know why this is important. It goes to the integrity of our law enforcement, not just in Louisville, but throughout the nation. How terrific it is that we live in a country where we can not only identify, admit, acknowledge the horrific things that sometimes our government and law enforcement does, but also recognize that we've got to move forward and that part of that moving forward is remedying those terrible, terrible things that have happened. And so indeed, the mayor of Louisville, Craig Greenberg, vowed to overhaul the department during the course of his recent campaign, calling the abuses identified now by the Department of Justice into this matter here, this horrific series of events involving the Louisville Police Department. He called it a betrayal of the integrity and the professionalism that the overwhelming majority of our officers bring to their job every day and night. And that's an important point. We always make it, but it's significant in my history, 30 years as a criminal prosecutor, working with investigators, also civil investigators as well. A great belief, a strong belief, and I believe that most Americans know this as well, that the great majority of law enforcement, local, state, tribal, federal law enforcement, good and decent people assigned to incredibly challenging jobs, done in a way that brings to the fore the best of what they do, their training, their experience, their insight. Even so, in the midst of that overwhelmingly good and positive effort by our law enforcement officers nationwide, we do, in fact, know that there are these instances like this in Louisville that shock us, that concern us, and prompt us to engage in responses. So what is the response? What happens as a result of this pattern of practice investigation that reveals all of this having to do with the Louisville Police Department, again, in the wake of the terrible, terrible murder of Breonna Taylor, the impact upon her family as well? Well, the answer is, of course, that this is the first step. This is identifying the problem. And in the days and weeks and months and probably, yes, years ahead, through the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, engagement with the police chief, with the cops on the street, with the detectives, the mid-level supervisors, and yes, with the mayor, members of the Common Council, other people in the state of Kentucky generally, all concerned about this, engaging in mechanisms identified in the report to remedy this kind of misconduct. Addressing this through training, through medial policy changes, through mechanisms to ensure that on a day-to-day basis, these kinds of things, probably difficult to say that they will never happen again, but are reduced to an absolute minimum to ensure that, again, the people of Louisville and beyond are protected and are served by the police and are not victimized by them. We will continue to follow this story because it's significant. This has happened, as you know, not just in Louisville, but in other places around the country. We know that as well, where the Department of Justice has come in and taken a look at circumstances like this, including, for example, the Minneapolis Police Department after the killing of George Floyd. Remember that as well. The Department of Justice is also looking, of course, in the wake of the brutal beating of Tyree Nichols, examining the Memphis Police Department special units, also working on how to monitor those units, and once again to ensure that their behavior, their conduct is consistent, not just with the Constitution, but with our fundamental notions about how law enforcement should and must serve the people of our nation, of our states, and of our cities. So we'll continue to monitor this again in the wake of this significant report coming out of the Department of Justice just this month. And we have on the phone, as a result of our discussion this morning, we've got Jake from Eureka. Jake, we appreciate your calling in. Glad to have you with us this morning and back on Morning Cannolis. Jake, your comment or your question or your thought for us this morning. And Jake, do we have you with us? Yes?
Oh, yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Okay, great. Jake, go ahead. Go ahead, Jake. Yes, glad to have you with us.
All right. Well, I was just going to comment on the breaking national news this morning that Donald Trump is throwing a fit, saying he's going to be arrested on Tuesday by Manhattan District Attorney's Office in the Stormy Daniels payoff crimes that he apparently has committed. He's calling for his supporters, much like, you know, prior to January 6th, to take our country back. I don't think this is our country. I think we voted him out of office, if I recall, in 2020. So what he's calling for his supporters to do comes right up to the line again. So when, you know, if something happens on Tuesday and they act out violently and once again attack police officers and potentially, you know, kill another police officer like they did on January 6th, what's going to happen at that point?
Sure, sure. Again, you know, and Jake, once again, I appreciate your contact, your engagement with us, because we're going to chat about Donald Trump as our next story is here. Let's take that one right at the top of this, since you've brought it to the fore and identified a very good concern here. Let's talk about some of the pieces of this, unpack this story a bit. An awful lot of rumor mongering out there. We don't know for sure. But a belief that Alvin Bragg, who is the district attorney in Manhattan, who has been investigating, again, the so-called catch-and-kill circumstance, where way back in 2016, right before the election, back in 2016, November, the presidential election, through Michael Cohen and perhaps even his son as well, that is Donald Trump's son, paid off Stormy Daniels and arguably another woman as well to keep quiet about a previous sexual engagement and affair that Donald Trump had with them. And, of course, that's in violation. That is in violation of federal election laws, affecting the election laws. And it may also be, and this is why Alvin Bragg involved in this, may also be in violation of New York law. Again, something that he has been investigating with respect to, again, reporting, but also financial issues, right? Are there banking matters related to the payment of this? These checks were cut to basically quiet these women as a part of the effort to keep them quiet in the advance of the campaign and the election of 2016. And again, Donald Trump anticipating, based upon lots of rumors that are out there, that he may indeed be indicted, be charged sometime, again, in the state system, in New York State, by the DA there. We don't know that for sure, but an awful lot of indication that maybe there is some preparation going on right now. And Donald Trump saying things that, again, are not helpful. Jake, obviously, that's understating it dramatically. Not only indicating that he anticipates being indicted, that may well be true. As an aside, we know, too, that in addition to the Alvin Bragg matter, there are at least two other criminal matters that he has got to be worried about. One of them is in Fulton County, Georgia, which is Atlanta, related to his attempt to undermine the Georgia election there. We know that is still going on. Fani Willis, who's the DA in Fulton County there, looking at that. She may at some point, with respect to a grand jury that she has impaneled there, also bring some criminal charges, state criminal charges. And we know as well that Jack Smith, who is the special counsel underneath, responsible to the Attorney General, also looking at not just Mar-a-Lago, but at January 6th and all the things related to that. So lots of different criminal investigations. Now, is it appropriate, and can Americans respond by articulating things in the public domain, perhaps even protesting, again, without violence? Absolutely, absolutely. But the things that they don't do and should not be a part of this is violence. We're going to talk more about Jake's comment and more about Donald Trump in the news this morning. Stay with us right after this break on our morning broadcast. Yeah, that's when they got you hypnotized. It seems like rain. It seems like rain. Your body needs nothing. You float around and got you hypnotized.
You are dear hero. Whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
KRadio.com.
We are back in this, our final segment of our first hour, first of 2 hours here on our Saturday morning broadcast, looking at stories in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Right before the break, we had a wonderful call from one of our listeners, Jake, who was talking about this news breaking this morning from Donald Trump, encouraging people, Americans, to go out there and protest if indeed he is the subject, finds himself on the receiving end of a criminal indictment, perhaps coming out of New York State and in particular Manhattan and the DA's office there, commenting as well that Donald Trump's criminal problems extend far beyond just New York and the Manhattan DA's office. Again, arguably looking at this issue about whether or not he paid people to be quiet in advance of the 2016 election. That, of course, in violation, from my perspective, of federal law, but also arguably in violation because of its financial aspect under Manhattan and New York state law as well. So again, Alvin Bragg, the DA, they're looking at that. We know that law enforcement may have been told already that they should be prepared if indeed there is a return of charges this coming week coming out of Manhattan. Could also come out of Fulton County, as I indicated, with respect to Donald Trump's attempt to undermine the vote there. Unlikely it's going to come out this coming week or the weeks just ahead from the Department of Justice itself. But that investigation also focusing on not only the attempts to undermine our election, but also, of course, upon Mar-a-Lago and the search of last August and the discovery there and in the months before and certainly after that Donald Trump had in his possession great numbers of classified documents to which he was not entitled, should not have had them. Again, arguably in violation of federal criminal law, being investigated right now by Jack Smith as a part of his very big assignment to look at all things Donald Trump and looking at whether or not there should be the return of federal indictments as to Donald Trump. Well, this past week, some significant issues in that context in particular involving an attorney named Evan Corcoran, C-O-R-C-O-R-A-N. Evan Corcoran was previously relevant to this investigation coming out of Mar-a-Lago because he was the one who drafted this statement to the Justice Department asserting that a diligent search for some classified documents at Mar-a-Lago had been conducted at that place and that, in fact, there was nothing else to find there, nothing else to discover there. Of course, we find out later on that FBI agents did, in fact, discover a huge amount of stuff, many more documents there in the wake of that representation. So what happens is that Jack Smith
calls this attorney, who, again, continues presumably to represent the former president, Donald Trump, calls him to the grand jury and wants to know what he knows about Mar-a-Lago, those documents there, the kinds of things that were happening both before and also during the course of the entire investigation. Up to this point, this attorney, Evan Corcoran, has invoked the attorney-client privilege and said, you know what, I can't talk about that. Those are things that my client and I spoke about. Well, Jack Smith and his colleagues went to the court, and in particular went to the chief judge of the district court there in the District of Columbia, and said, you know what, this exception to the otherwise requirement to appear and to testify related to the attorney-client relationship, which exists and is real and is legitimate, should not apply here. Why? Why? Because of something called the crime fraud exceptions. We've talked about that before on this show. Prosecutors did this routinely during my term as a criminal prosecutor in the federal system, state system as well. Prosecutors can get around that privilege, that attorney-client privilege, if they can convince a judge, and yes, indeed, the Department of Justice did that right here, that an attorney's services were being used in furtherance of a crime, not for some legitimate representation issue, but to promote a crime. And that is called, once again, the crime fraud exception. The Department of Justice, Jack Smith, invoking that exception in this case, arguing to Judge Beryl Howell, who is the chief judge there. She is the outgoing chief judge of the federal court, that the testimony was needed. And indeed, Judge Beryl Howell just recently said, yep, that's right. I'm finding, based upon presentations made to me in camera, outside of the public domain, we don't know all the details here, I'm finding the crime fraud exception does apply, pierces, if you will, comes through the attorney-client privilege, and therefore, Mr. Corcoran, you're obliged to appear and to provide testimony to the grand jury. A significant issue coming out of matters related to Donald Trump, that one concerning, again, not New York, not Fulton County, not January 6th, but nonetheless, issues related to the Mar-a-Lago event in particular. I mentioned before that Beryl Howell, the chief judge of the district court, she is not leaving the bench, but her term is concluding. And so one of the other pieces of news that's going to come out in this week and previous weeks and future weeks is that the chief judge of that court, a man named James Boasberg, is going to be taking the oath of office, taking over from Beryl Howell as the chief judge in that circumstance, and taking on those responsibilities for overseeing this criminal grand jury investigation that Beryl Howell has conducted up to this point. Judge Howell expressed confidence in her colleague going forward, cautiously avoiding any grand jury specific issues. That's in violation, of course, of the law if she were to disclose anything. But Judge Howell said this: the grand jury presents oftentimes novel issues and issues that deal with high-profile individuals, yes, indeed, like the former president, generating enormous strobe light of press attention. Witness this story having to do with Attorney Corcoran just this past week. She went on to say Judge Boasberg, again, the judge who is going to become the chief judge, has the seasoning on the bench, the legal expertise, and the ability to manage and juggle multiple matters that makes him very well suited to be the next chief judge. Again, those are the words of the, not resigning, not retiring, but just moving on, the judge appointments in the chief spot move around. And so that's exactly what's happening. We're going to hear more from Judge Boasberg, presumably in the future, as this very important stage in the investigation focusing on January 6th continues. Significantly, what do we know about Judge Boasberg? Lots of things. Among other things, he had a sentencing in October of this past year. He imposed 3 months of home confinement on a rioter in line with the request of prosecutors. That rioter involved, of course, in the January 6th event. Here's what he said at the time of imposing that particular sentence upon the defendant at that time. He said, I can't emphasize enough, as I've done before, that the cornerstone of our democratic republic is the peaceful transfer of power after an election. And what you and others did, he's speaking now to the defendant, was nothing less than an attempt to undermine that system of justice. So a little bit this morning related to the crime fraud exception, the passing of the gavel to a new chief judge there in the District of Columbia, And all of that, of course, related to the ongoing investigations of the former president. And we, as we go into our final moments here, as we come back after the top of the hour break, we're going to take some additional callers who are calling in. So I encourage you to stay online if you're calling in right now. Other callers, 844-967-2789. We're going to continue our civics discussion, talking about immunities and talking about other matters related to criminal investigations here on our morning broadcast. Coming to you this morning from the wonderful location here in Mazomanie and the Wisconsin Grassroots Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app. AB.